This is Jim Fester, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. Before I introduce my special guest, I'd like to make a couple remarks about a conference that will be held in Madison, Wisconsin this weekend at the Radisson, which is devoted to the science and the politics of 9/11. And I'd just like to mention, anyone who would like the details about this conference can visit 911scholars.org and scroll down to the conference icon, and they'll see a list of 15 outstanding speakers, one of whom, in fact, is my special guest today. You'll also see the complete schedule. But what I want to mention now, before I introduce her, is reasons why the anti-war movement should care about 9/11. The reasons are, or why civil libertarians should care about the 9/11 movement, or why anyone who cares about the future of democracy in this country should care about the 9/11 movement. The first point I'd make is that 9/11 was the fuse for the explosion that became the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq. Without any doubt, this was the event that the government manipulated, propagandized, distorted in order to instill fear into the American people, in order to encourage us to support a war in violation of international law, the UN Charter, and the U.S. Constitution, a war we would never have supported but for the belief, which we're convinced was induced in us on false grounds, that the United States had been attacked by 19 Islamic fundamentalists. This claim of the government is one we have shown to be false in every major respect. So, again, if you want to see how much we've been lied to, go to 911scholars.org and check out whydoubt911.org. Check out whydoubt911, which is a summary of around 20 basic reasons. So the 9/11, the anti-war movement should be very concerned about 9/11 because it has been the rationale that has been used to maintain and justify these illegal wars that are costing the lives of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, and before it's done, probably 10,000 American soldiers, Marines, and sailors. The second reason is, of course, this same event has been used to justify introducing wireless wiretapping, warrantless wiretapping, national surveillance, data mining, the use of very sophisticated computer techniques to undermine us, to pass the Patriot Act, to subvert civil rights in this country. So if you care about civil rights in this country, you've got to care about 9/11. Because if we're right, and this was a false flag operation of the country attacking itself in order to blame it on its enemy, someone it wanted to be its enemy in this case, then you have to understand 9/11. So if you believe in civil rights, then don't let yourself be manipulated by the false motivation induced by the phony reasons that the government's given you about 9/11. And third, and terribly important to us all, with regard to the future of democracy, the President of the United States, through a series of executive orders and other actions, has placed himself in the position of being able to declare the country under military law virtually by whim. If any event occurs that, in his judgment, is sufficiently catastrophic as to deserve sustaining the Constitution, he has delegated himself that power. My personal opinion is this is completely unconstitutional. It takes the Congress out of the loop. It makes it a unilateral decision. But the fact is that by the time that a court or process would have reviewed this action and other executive orders that he has signed to determine its unconstitutionality, it will, in my opinion, have already been invoked. So there are three enormously huge reasons why anyone who cares about either the war in Iraq and ending it, or maintaining democracy in the United States, or the possibility of an additional false flag attempt here, which we anticipate is going to occur probably during the month of August, then they should dig into 9/11, learn all they can about it, go to 911scholars.org, listen to lectures, go to conferences, watch DVDs, get them on your local community access television. The more people know about this, the better. And let me just make three very general points about how we can tell the government has been lying to us about 9/11 from scratch. The first is that George Bush, during a press conference when confronted by a reporter, and this was nearly a year ago now, when asked what Saddam Hussein had to do with 9/11, admitted nothing. He used the word nothing. I believed it would be the headline on every newspaper and in every little town in the entire United States, but it received hardly a bit of mention. So the President of the United States himself admitted, notwithstanding the fact that he's seeking to recycle this false claim, he admitted there on that occasion that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. That's number one. Number two is that while the government, the administration, has claimed that Saddam Hussein was in cahoots with al-Qaeda, the Senate Intelligence Committee made a report that, in fact, it had determined that not only was Saddam not in cahoots with al-Qaeda, but it was seeking to track down and incarcerate and even kill its leaders. This is a finding that was reinforced by the Inspector General of the Pentagon, who conducted his own investigation and arrived at exactly the same conclusion, that Saddam was not only not in cahoots with al-Qaeda, but was actually actively seeking to track down its leaders, incarcerate, or even kill them. And, of course, that makes great sense politically, because Saddam believed in a secular state, not a religious state. He had major factions to contend with, in the Sunnis, the Shias, and the Kurds. It's hardly surprising that a fractured or potentially fractured state like Iraq, just as Yugoslavia before it, made out of a series of little countries, often at war with one another, would require a strong hand. In the case of Iraq, Saddam Hussein, in the case of Yugoslavia, Tito. So, you know, students of history should have been aware that if you take off that strong hand, that factionalism, wars, and dissent are inevitable, which just displays that there had to be overwhelming motives for going there, which I'm convinced concerned oil, Israel, and ideology, in order to override the realization that you're going to create a mess if you intervene. And third, last June, I'm talking about over a year ago now, some 14 months ago, Ed Haas of the Muckraker Report contacted the FBI to ascertain why, in FBI wanted posters for Osama bin Laden, there was no mention of 9/11. And he was told by FBI spokesman Rex Toombe that was because the FBI has no hard evidence connecting Osama bin Laden to the events of 9/11. So we say if Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11, and if Osama bin Laden had nothing to do with 9/11, then who was responsible for the events of 9/11, including the killing of 3,000 citizens of this country? Ask yourself a simple question. Who benefited? Who benefited? Whose political fortunes were in the tank? Who was able to capitalize on 9/11? Who has made the most out of 9/11 to bring about the creation of what appears to be a police fascist state in the making, to bring about unlawful wars that had to do with an oil pipeline in Afghanistan and taking control of Iraqi oil, one of the world's largest reserves? I ask you, Dick Cheney always said the real prize was Iraqi oil. It's easy to get out of the ground and it's very high quality. We believe the American people are entitled to know the truth about their own history, and that there's no higher form of respect for those who died in 9/11 than to know how, for their survivors to know how and why they died. And that is the task to which we are devoted. Check out 911scholars.org. 911scholars.org. In a moment, I'll introduce my special guest for today's program. Those who don't know better should know that a paperback in England is a dirty book, and that the dirtiest book we have around here today is the 9/11 Commission Report. If I were trying to put together the qualifications for an outstanding expert to study the events of 9/11, especially those at the World Trade Center, I would look for somebody who had a background or degrees in structural engineering, in engineering mechanics, also known as applied physics, and in materials engineering science. These appear to me to be the three most relevant disciplines. Imagine my astonishment, therefore, to discover that we actually have such a person in the 9/11 research movement, a former professor of mechanical engineering, no less, from Clemson University, who has degrees in all three of those areas, a bachelor's in civil engineering with a focus on structural and engineering mechanics, also known as applied physics, and a PhD in materials engineering science. She is, in my judgment, the single most highly qualified scientist studying the events of 9/11, and it's a pleasure to have her back on the show again, Dr. Judy Wood. Judy, welcome back to the Dynamic Duo.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Let's pursue our past practice of visiting one of your websites. I think the topic that we had in mind discussing today has to do with this claim that has been widely made of the existence of molten metal in vast quantities for weeks and weeks, possibly even months, after the events of 9/11, which has sometimes been offered as evidence for the use of thermite or thermate on the Twin Towers, a claim that there's maybe reason to doubt on multiple grounds, but where the possibility of this molten metal is extremely interesting, and where it seems to me you have done the most important research in seeking to evaluate that hypothesis.
I have a link to the particular page from the front page of my website for list for today's show.
Okay, well, let's tell everyone where to go. I assume we're talking about going to drjudywood.com.
Yes, all one word, drjudywood.com.
Okay, I'm there. And now I'm looking for...
on the right side where it says related articles.
Related articles. What is molten metal? Should we click there?
Yep, what molten metal?
Oh, what molten metal, yes. Not what is, but what molten metal. Okay. Now I'm at a page called the Molecular Dissociation. I flip down to a closer look at the PSYOPs of 9/11. Is that right?
Yes. It automatically will go to that point on the page.
Okay. Section number, Roman 13, a closer look at the PSYOPs of 9/11. Continue.
Let me first ask, what is the perfect crime?
Well, the perfect crime is one that's undetectable, that no one ever realizes even took place.
There's one worse than that.
Namely?
Or more extreme than that. One that is just so horrible, so wicked awful, that no one would even want to believe someone would commit such a crime.
Yes. Yes, and that's certainly a form of a perfect crime that you can't even bring yourself to contemplate the possibility that it was perpetrated.
So if bad guys that you've never seen before that were just irrational, that's more acceptable as a crime than being done in your own backyard from the inside.
My friends, neighbors, or persons you trust.
And that is, I think, the perfect crime because no one will ever want to suspect. Not no one, but most won't want to suspect. And they'll do anything to go there, to keep from going there.
And, of course, that's a form of cognitive dissonance where you have certain core beliefs that are so threatened by information that you reject it altogether or suppress it, can't bring yourself to consider it because it's simply too disturbing psychologically.
And that makes for an excellent cover-up because people won't want to go there.
Yes.
So here we're talking about that video clip I have that I call an excellent or serious PSYOPs video, where it starts out with Pataki having the building, not even the right number of floors, but telling us about the dust. Okay, so we're listening to the dust, and then they start talking about the I call it fuming.
Shall we play this video too?
We can, just to get...
it's just a few minutes long, right?
Yep.
Okay, I'll play it and put the phone down here so we can listen. And for those who are watching, we're at drjudywood.com, and we have gone to the link about what molten metal, and we're about to look at a video here, a short video.
Transcript is right below.
This is the South Tower. This is 106 stories tall. This is what it was. Up there was the North Tower. And you look. And you see, and there's no concrete. There's very little concrete. All you see is aluminum and steel. What happened to the concrete? The concrete was pulverized. And I was down here Tuesday, and it was like you were on a foreign planet. All of Lower Manhattan, not just this place, from river to river, it was rough powder, 2-3 inches thick. The concrete was just pulverized. And what's the explain, Governor? The smoke that's still comes out. There's still fire down below. There is such an incredibly deep pile of rubble, and then the tower goes down 5-6 stories underground, that there's still fire underneath.
This is how it's been since they were...
Oh, unbelievable. This is 6 weeks later, almost 6 weeks later. And as we get closer, the center was to get hotter and hotter. It's probably 15 inches deep. We've got some small windows into what we saw with the door at some point, and it looks like an oven. You know, it's just warm inside. It's just a bright, bright, reddish orange color.
See that stuff he's pulling out? We're going to hold off on the war. See the stuff he's pulling out?
Yeah.
That's hot.
He committed too much to what the other two are doing.
Great.
You see how the debris is still smoking? That's when the fire is going to start burning. 8 weeks later, we still got fires burning. Every now and then, one of the pieces of equipment will dig in, they'll open up a small area, the oxygen will rush in, and you'll get this plume of brown rock smoke coming up. That's because that fire just got more oxygen. I mean, these things are burning. At one point, I think they were about 2,800 degrees.
Underground fires, ignited by burning jet fuel, smoldered for months. Fed by molten steel and buried carpeting, office furniture, wood paneling, and paper.
That's one of the biggest things. Out the underground, it's still, I believe, 1,100 degrees. Five feet. The smell within a few hours.
You sit down below and you see molten steel. Molten steel running down the channel. Like you're in a foundry. One of the more unusual artifacts to emerge from the rubble is this rock-like object that has come to be known as the meteorite.
It's a fused element of steel, molten steel, and concrete, and all of these things all fused by the heat into one single element, and almost like a...
My special guest today, Judy Wood, is the, in my judgment, leading scientist studying the events of 9/11 in the world today, and we're visiting her website and taking a look at the whole issue of molten metal. Judy, I'm sorry that time misjudgment. We didn't quite finish the clip, but I think we got the idea.
Yes, it was enough. The end is not so important, but I would like to go through what it covered and how and why.
Yes.
You notice that the transcript is up, and let's start out. Pataki talks, when we first meet somebody, we're judging them. Is this someone I can trust or believe or not? And so he starts out talking about dust. We all saw dust. We believe there's dust. Ah, he's believable. This goes on subconsciously.
Okay.
And then the question comes up: what's all this stuff coming out of the ground? I call it fuming.
Right, but they're presuming it's smoke.
And immediately go into giving the description that it's fires and underground fires and burning at some high temperatures.
Yeah.
It gets reinforced. Now, and then the firemen talking about it's unbelievable since day one. It's been 6 weeks, almost 6 weeks. And as we get closer, it gets hotter and hotter, and it's probably 15 degrees in there.
1,500 degrees. Where'd they come up with those temperatures, Judy? I mean, the fires were actually, according to NIST, not burning over 500 degrees in relation to 233 other samples, and three others didn't get above 1,200. How do they even get something like 1,500?
What I want to point out, and be very, very clear about this, I do not believe he is lying at all, not knowingly. He's, I don't know what you call a lie, that knowingly misleading from the truth. I believe he believes it.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's a nice point. See, to commit a lie, you've got to be deliberately saying something that is false and that you know is false and that you are saying with the intention to mislead. If he's simply reporting on a sincere belief with no intention to mislead, where he actually thinks what he's saying is true, it's not a lie.
Correct. Misinformation, I think, is...
Yes.
Now, he talked about this bright reddish-orange color stuff coming out of the ground.
Right.
Spring inside. And he likely saw something that we see in that photo below that statement, where you have some of the grapplers digging around, and we know that those can't tolerate more than 82 degrees centigrade.
Yes.
Or else they're ruined.
Yes.
We can see this instant rust over all of the steel, and the steel turning to rust, just going up into the air. And the fuming coming out of the ground. So it doesn't appear to be hot. But if somebody would look at this and say, what on earth is this, who's working at ground zero, and if someone told them it was fire, and it was, 1,500 degrees in there, he needs an explanation because something weird he's encountered. He's given an explanation. He takes it and moves on.
Yes.
And especially the fact that this was such a horrendous event. People don't want to live through it twice.
Yes.
So he's looked at it once. He doesn't want to think any more about it. So he grabs whatever answer is given and moves on. And he talks about how he doesn't want to put any water on it because it's going to make steam. Well, why isn't the whole area making steam? But that's what he's told, that is steam coming out of the ground. I'm sure that's what he was led to believe. And the most interesting one is the woman talking about the steel-toed boots. And after a few hours on the pile, these guys' boots melt. The steel-toed boots melt. And we know that that's kind of ridiculous because your oven isn't even, 2,000 degrees or 1,100 degrees is what she thinks. And you'd incinerate your turkey.
Yeah.
And, the oven doesn't melt.
Nice point.
What about the feet that are inside those boots? If those guys were talking about their boots, falling apart and needing to get new boots, then their feet are still working. We didn't hear them talking about their feet being incinerated. So they're obviously experiencing something that needs an explanation. So if the steel is melting, perhaps the steel in the boots is coming apart. Because we saw the steel turning to dust in midair from the towers, and it continued to degrade on the ground. If workmen are walking over that material as it's breaking down, and I think that process went on for a while until it died out, that it's going to do something to the boots. Perhaps it's going to dissolve the soles of the boots or even the steel toes in the boots. And how can you explain that to someone? Here they have boots, they're walking over, the pile, and their boots are disintegrating. You better give them a cover story real fast or they're going to start asking too many questions. And so, they're concentrating on looking for survivors, cleaning up ground zero. They're not trying to figure out what caused this. And so you tell them that it's molten metal or, 1,100 degrees, they're not going to question it. They're going to, now they have an answer, now they can move on and keep doing their work. And so I believe there's a real source of this rumor mill that started getting passed along, but it got repeated over and over again. It was reinforced from person to person to person. And in order to undo that urban legend, it takes someone to stop and think, does this make sense? But also that takes someone willing to look back. And people who are working on the pile, that must have been emotionally very tough to realize what took place. That 3,000 people, where are the bodies? It became very difficult. So, no, I do not believe those people are lying at all. I believe that is part of the PSYOP. And I think it took place worldwide. And there's even false memory syndrome. And I know of a personal friend who had a next-door neighbor worked at the Pentagon and came running home that day and told my friend that she had witnessed the airplane wing tearing the roof off the Pentagon.
Really?
And she believed it. This was not made up. So somehow that idea got in her head. And I don't know how that was orchestrated or it was a power of suggestion, but I think all of us can look back to our childhood and growing up and realize a story we've heard over and over again, that we forget that whether or not we participate in the story they're talking about. You hear about the story, you start forgetting, was I there or not? And there's a thing called false memory syndrome, where there's some photographs they get of people in their younger days, and like taking a hot air balloon ride, and they Photoshop them in taking a hot air balloon ride when the person in reality never did. They show the person this photo, and they see themselves in the hot air balloon, and they pretty soon come up with a story that goes along with it, because they feel that it must be in their memory someplace, and they try hard to remember it, and the brain is very good at healing, and they think this is something that needs to be fixed. So memory isn't necessarily trustworthy. It doesn't mean it's a knowing lie. Memories can also be manipulated. I don't know exactly how...
stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest is Judy Wood, former professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson University. We're visiting Judy's website at drjudywood.com. And you want to scroll down to the question that says, what molten metal? And it'll take you to the page we're on now. Judy?
Yes, we're talking about the psyops aspect of it. I'm not a psychologist, but I've read, you know, various explanations, and I've also seen what's gone on. How can we all have been this slow to start questioning things or to start speaking out confidently? I myself noticed things on 9/11. I spoke out to a few colleagues, but then you're hushed because it's not so acceptable. And I think that that's part of this phenomenon.
Yeah, absolutely right. I have no doubt about it.
The next one, this is all of us. You know, what happened to us in different degrees. There's another video further down. We won't play it, but folks can. It's where Scott Pelley, news reporter, is talking to some medical workers at the scene. There's some emergency room doctors that said after noon on 9/11, people quit coming into the emergency room. They had no customers. So they came down to the ground zero to see, you know, what could be done. They thought that was puzzling. That why aren't there any people coming into the emergency room? And so Scott Pelley says, where are all the bodies? And this doctor, you can tell these guys really care about people. He just kind of short circuits. He just cannot go there. Nobody apparently has given him an answer. If somebody gave him an answer, he'd probably, you know, comfortable just repeating it. And so he goes into this engineering explanation about how the buildings just all came down, and it was in this big whoosh down this, like, chute, and it was the power of a nuclear blast. And he's talking about how buildings are built. This is a doctor giving an engineering description that makes no sense, but you can see how much pain he's in. He's trying to explain it and trying to get away from thinking what happened to those people. And it's kind of odd. And there's another doctor there that is asked that. He gets speechless. And he says, well, I'd like to think that they all made out alive, and that's why we don't have patients coming in. It's so, you can see for these guys, it's so painful to go there.
The concept that all these bodies were disintegrated just is something they can't accept.
They can't even see the dead bodies laying around. And they haven't, you know, been given a story yet. You bet as soon as they're given a story that it's all this molten metal or whatever, they'll latch on to, because they don't have to think about the horror anymore. And imagine, you know, so really this is all of us, how we would react in that situation. The emergency workers are just doing their thing, and they don't want to think about it. If you give them an answer, they'll grab for it. So in no way do I think any of those emergency workers on the pile, the steel workers, are lying. They've just been given this other explanation, and that allows them to go on and do their work. But as we continue down, let's ask some more questions. I have in Figure 13 on this page, there is that USGS image, that supposedly a satellite image that showed hot spots on the 16th of September.
Yes.
And they were all pretty much gone away by September 23rd. Well, let's suppose this is a true picture or a true image. How can it cool that fast? And if it cooled that fast, were they talking about fires for 99 days?
Yes. Yes. Nice point. I mean, September 11th to the 23rd is only 12 days.
But the 16th, that's only 5 days.
And that's only 5 days.
And at the 7-day mark, we had these guys climbing down to a wet basement.
Right below.
Yeah, right below that is the next image, figure 15. And that is supposedly the hottest place, according to that hot map.
And you got pools of water that aren't even percolating, and you got guys walking along perfectly normally. They don't seem to have their boots being dry roasted or melting, and their feet turning to charcoal.
Correct. They're all bundled up. It looks like a damp, wet basement. so, you know, let's look at what's going on, because we've been psyops as well as having them psyops. So there's another video I would like you to play, but there's no words to it. It's the steam explosion that we heard about a little over a week ago.
Sure, the one on the left. We'll go ahead and play it.
The one on the left.
Okay, I'm going to play it now. As you say, there's no sound, so we're just going to play it. Yikes.
That was pretty good energy.
I would say 20 seconds worth.
It's there's several references below from different sources, from The Independent, from The New York Times, and they believe it's from a burst in a steel pipe from, one water hammer is one description, but the mayor said, well, it was raining pretty hard all day long, and they thought water might have gotten into the steam pipe.
How ridiculous.
It happened in 1989.
It did.
Yeah, Gramercy Park.
Yeah.
And so, but something made the thing explode. And if it was that, hot steam pipes, and if it's possible for water to do that on a hot steam pipe, what would water do if it rained all day on molten metal?
You think you'd get some kind of steam reaction.
Steam explosion. I understand that's what it was at Chernobyl that caused that explosion. And the fires were out in 9 days. That's a nuclear plant. But it was cold water on something that was really hot. And it's a well-known phenomenon, and I have the description in Wikipedia about it below. But look at figure 16. Here it is shooting up. Notice the firefighters are not walking into it. Different than ground zero. They're not, these guys aren't walking into it. And if, for the steam explosion, now at figure 17, it shows this poor fellow who is so unfortunate to be at the wrong place at the wrong time.
He's a truck driver.
And that's where it blew right under his truck. And his truck got steam cleaned, but he's burned with third-degree burns over 80% of his body.
Well, I don't expect him to live. That would generally induce death.
I would hope he was still hanging on in critical condition, last I knew.
Huh.
But, as of the time of this article.
That's a very painful kind of burn to suffer, too, a steam burn. Very nasty.
And that's from just being at the wrong place at the wrong time. So you know that if that steam coming out of the ground at ground zero, it would roast the workers.
If it actually were steam coming out. That's a nice point, Judy. I mean, just think of steam coming out of your tea kettle. You don't want to put your hand over it, for God's sake. You're going to scald it.
Or if you have a pressure cooker on your stove.
Or a pressure cooker. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Or a pot of boiling water. You're not going to put your face in it.
That's right.
Over it. So several different articles talking about that very thing, about how cold water on something hot causes a steam explosion. And down below those red boxes, I boxed them red.
Yep, stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Today, another appearance by my special guest, Judy Wood, whom I consider to be the most qualified scientist studying the events of 9/11, especially what happened at the World Trade Center. We're on her website, drjudywood.com, and if you scroll down on the home page, on the right-hand side, you'll see a link to What Molten Metal. We're on that page now, and Judy, let's see, we must be on we were looking at 13, 14, and 15, then looking at the steam explosion, video 5 and figure 16.
Let's go down to figure 18.
Figure 18, right, okay. Beneath the red car where the fellow was haplessly in the wrong place at the wrong time.
17.
Yeah, that was. Now we're at 18.
Okay, 18. And we have a school bus and a city bus. I believe people were burned, but they weren't, you know, killed, but they were burned a bit. But notice in that site, you have firemen over on the left side. They are not going into that steam.
Yes.
They are not walking steam. Steam is dangerous. It's hot.
And the point you're making is the other photographs at the World Trade Center show workers in the midst of this so-called steam, which is highly unlikely if it actually were steam.
That's why I'm careful to give it another name. I call it fuming or, soap suds or whatever. Giving it another name so that we don't mislead ourselves mentally.
Oh, absolutely right. Merely describing it as steam is to impose an interpretation on the phenomena, which it turns out is consistent with alternatives. Fuming, for example, which may be a result of molecular dissociation. But so few persons, I think, are familiar with that phenomenon, Judy, that they're easily taken in by the simple description that it's steam, and they don't contemplate the fact that those workers couldn't be walking around if it actually were.
Correct. And if folks see this, and they see, what is this? And they're told it's smoke from underground fires. Okay, they have an answer. Now they can move on. And that's why I give it the name fumes. There's fumes from something. We don't know what, but just generic fumes.
Yes.
You got what is otherwise it biases our observations. But in this, we know it's steam, and we know these guys are not walking into it. And the hazy stuff we see over Ground Zero, they do walk into it. So, and they don't get burned. We didn't have third-degree burns over 80% of somebody's body just by walking through it. And right below that box is a little light blue box about bullet casting. How to cast your own bullets at home.
Should I click on it?
No, that takes you to the article, the reference article. But what I took out an excerpt that's here, and the key statements are, make sure you have at least 25 pounds of dry sand at the ready.
So if you spill any of the molten metal, you can contain it.
Yeah, if there is a metal spill, dump the sand on it, and it will contain the flow and cool it quickly.
And then I see the next highlighted sentence, you must never put water on molten metal because it will cause a steam explosion.
And they're just talking about just enough metal for little bullets.
Yeah, so they're talking about a very minute quantity of molten metal, but even then if you put water on it, you're going to cause an explosion.
If we look at the picture below there, figures 19 and 20, here we're moving back to Ground Zero. And there was a break in a water main on West Street near the West Street-Liberty intersection. And West Street got a few inches of water flooding it. So here we have this, calling it a lake. We have this lake here, and the picture on the right is a guy wading out into it. He's not looking like he got cooked. It's not boiling. No,
absolutely not. Yes, this is highly counter-indicative of molten metal.
And that was on 9/11. Those pictures were taken.
When presumably the molten metal was most extensive and at its greatest temperature.
And the 14th of September, I don't know if you recall, there was a horrendous rainstorm all day. And they commented the next day they were surprised it hadn't put out the fire. But we also know on 9/11 there were fire trucks there with hoses. Why were there no steam explosions? And there's water.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Well, I think your example of the casting bullets with very tiny amounts of molten metal and they exploding, I mean, it's quite a dramatic description they actually give. It says, you must never put water on molten metal because it will cause a steam explosion. This will burn you and send splatters of molten metal flying all over the place, making your problems much worse.
it would be much worse. You use water on grease fires on the stove. You have, overheated, oil in your fry pan and it catches fire.
Yeah, you don't use water there either.
Because of the same reason. It splatters, it explodes. It explodes the hot oil all around. So it's hard to believe that there could be any molten metal at Ground Zero because of, number one, all the fire hoses on the scene. Number two, you get this break in a water main. Number three, on the 14th of September, there's that horrendous rainstorm all day. And as we continue down the page, it's a reminder of these guys walking through the fuming haze. They're working in it. You know, if that was a hot grill with steam coming out of it, they'd look more like a grilled cheese sandwich.
Figure 21.
Yeah. They're standing in the middle of it. They wouldn't be working voluntarily in the middle of hot steam. They would be cooked.
Very nice point.
As we continue down, we see more of this fuming stuff coming up, and with the grapplers working in it. And grapplers cannot survive more than 82 degrees centigrade. They're without being permanently damaged. They just lock up. So it's unlikely it could be very hot, because in order for the grappler to drive out there, it's already, you know, driving over a lot of the stuff. So it doesn't make sense. Now we come down to the figures 24, 25, 26, and 27. Remember, it rained on the 14th. I have pictures of a particular set of wheat checks, I call them, that were taken on the 15th, 16th, and 20th. The 20th, we had another big rainstorm there. But on the 14th and 15th, it was dry. Look at figure 24. In the background, you see this white steam-looking stuff coming up, the fuming. And look at figure 26 directly below it. You don't have that steam-looking stuff coming up. So why, on a rainy day, do you not have the fuming, but on a dry day you do?
When you'd expect precisely the opposite. I mean, at the very least, you'd expect vastly more steam from water interaction with the hot molten metal or, of course, actual steam explosions.
Correct. And these fellows in the figure 26 are walking on the wet wheat checks, and if you click on the picture, you get an enlargement. And the one on the right gets a slightly bigger picture, but you can see little puddles pooling up on the wrinkles in the beam. It's interesting how the beams are rippled. That's why I noticed these pictures to begin with. But everything's wet and sopping wet. And if it was really hot, why aren't those beams fuming? You know, steaming?
Yes.
Why is the water sitting there motionless, you know, covering the beams?
Yes.
It doesn't make sense. So something is happening to those workers' boots.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest is Judy Wood, former professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson University. It's my great pleasure to have her on frequently because I regard her as the leading scientist studying the events of 9/11. Today, we're looking at evidence she's put together about the possibility that there was no massive pool of molten metal beneath the World Trade Center at the end of the day. And it's really quite persuasive, in my opinion. Judy, where should we pick up?
Where we left figures 26 and 27, the wet pictures. But then ask ourselves, too, we've often heard this, the phrase, molten metal was running. It was flowing somewhere.
Yes.
Where is it flowing to? And how does it keep flowing?
Yeah, good point. Was it flowing too? Yes.
Does it flow, uphill in the morning and downhill at night?
It's a reversible process.
If it keeps going down to the lowest point, we saw puddles down there in the basement because of all the water hoses on the system. And why would it be moving someplace? In order for it to run someplace, there has to be room, and where is it running? And is it gets where it's going? If you had water on, you had liquid water someplace and it starts running, pretty soon it's empty, wherever it came from. Like a tank empties out after a while. But we never saw any big sheets of resolidified material coming out either. Now, below the figure 26 and 27 is a short paragraph where I'm quoting a particular source saying the reason why you don't put water on hot oil is that water, when it becomes steam, expands by a factor of 1,600 times in volume. That's what causes the steam explosion. When water turns into steam, it takes up a whole lot more room, and that is why pressure cookers work and why the steam has to come out. But if you heat it up, all the water up instantly, it becomes steam, you're going to have this huge expansion. And these last two pictures, figure 28 and 29, let's notice again, they're wetting down this fuming. Let's not assume it's from heat. And the picture on the right, figure 29, the dirt is completely saturated with water to the point that it's peaching out and kind of running into that little pool down there, that little pond of water.
Yes.
Why is that bursting into steam instead? You know, the dirt and so forth. And if you're dumping water directly on that stuff, it can't be hot.
And I presume the rainbows in the background could be caused by a variety of different means that the dissociated particles could create one too.
Oh, no, this is a rainbow from water. Water droplets. You know, after rain or during rain, you get this rainbow where the sunlight hits water in the air?
Okay, so that is a water particulate phenomenon.
They're still wetting down the dirt. Now, this is at the base of Ground Zero, the basement of one of the towers. And they kept bringing dirt in and dumping it on the site?
Yeah.
If the dirt goes somewhere, when they're hauling stuff out, they're still got dirt there. So that's the dirt that they've been dumping on Ground Zero that we see. And
yes.
A few core columns in the background that are extremely rusty looking, very orangey rust. One has to wonder why they'd be so rusty. That's pretty much what I wanted to show on this page, is that we were all psyops, but to repeat urban legends, looking at any scientific basis for it, is not very scientific. And you know, the danger of repeating it is that you're reinforcing the psyops. And they carefully designed the psyops with things like that in mind. So, you know, ask yourself, does it make sense that we have molten metal with dumping water on top of it? The next thing I would like to talk about is go to the front page, and there's the other link for today's show.
Okay, back to the first page.
And the other one is A Touch of the Hidden Hand.
A Touch of the Hidden Hand, I got it. I'm there.
And this is an article that Andrew Johnson put together based on his notes preparing for a radio show last Thursday.
A radio show that I believe was canceled.
Not just that, I was to be on the radio show with Andrew, and he was going to be discussing these topics. He'd been carefully organizing his notes and sending it to me and to Frank and back and forth through email, which, you know, gets evaluated as in transit. And then it came time at 3 o'clock we were to be on the show. We were waiting for the phone call, and it never came. And we found out later that moments, literally moments before the show was to begin, the host of that show was fired.
Well, I have no doubt that it was because you were about to appear on the show, Judy.
There's no logical reason. Now, it's important that we look at this information to see why they didn't want that on the show.
By the way, I also got an email today that someone has been trying to download Kevin Barrett's program on an A-Info server is unable to get it any longer. I think what we're seeing is an attempt to gradually strangle the 9/11 truth movement in relation to the Internet and talk radio.
And that worries me and several others, that with a lot of odd things going on, like this Presidential Directive 51.
Yes.
Which allows Bush to reassign at his discretion a whole new Congress and a whole new Senate if something happens.
Well, the situation's quite absurd, you know, and that the Congress or the Democratic Party or whoever isn't speaking out loudly and strongly is profoundly disturbing. Are we all just reduced to servile, brainless boobs? oops, I mean, this is pathetic.
It's they're all committing treason because they need to stand up for what's right in this country. And what it appears to come across as is if something happens. So what's going to happen?
Yes.
Let's predict when something's going to happen.
And this is why Andrew put together his notes on this very topic.
To say exactly what happened. And we discussed already, you and I did earlier today, about the toasting cars and all the various points on my website.
We'll go through these notes of Andrew Johnson when I return with my special guest, Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest is Dr. Judy Wood, former professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson University, and in my judgment, the leading expert studying the events of 9/11. Judy, we're discussing a piece written by Andrew Johnson in which he's talking about the possibility, the prospect, or even the probability of another false flag attack on the United States in the near future.
And what might be used. There's a particular post that someone left on a forum that I recently noticed I would like to read, and it's very powerful. It says, "We stand at the beginning of a new age. Our government has in its hands a method of disrupting the molecular basis for matter, and its first impulse was to weaponize it. Is this so hard to understand? Like splitting atoms to create destruction was so hard to understand in 1945. Of course, this new invention came to the United States when it ruled supreme. A weapon system of vast new power comes online and we don't have an enemy worthy of it. So naturally we used it on ourselves, wag the dog." That was pretty powerful. That to show off this new weapon, didn't have anyone else was going to use it on, and it was used against our own country. Now, how might it be used again? Are you there?
Oh, yes. No, I'm just contemplating your words.
Okay. So keeping that in mind, we are concerned that it's going to be used again soon. And they're going to use it with a cover story of using nukes. But nukes are detectable. We have all sorts of safety measures about detecting, nuclear devices coming into this country, moving around within this country, who owns what nukes where. It's all very well kept track of. So, the chance of that actually happening is very slim. But this device is not very easily tracked. If it's in orbit, you can't track it.
And, of course, the changing of the continuity plan is, in fact, profoundly disturbing. Why change it if you aren't going to use it? It wasn't necessary to change it. It took Congress out of the loop, placed the entire decision-making of revising the entire mode of functioning of the American government in the hands of one man, George W. Bush.
Yeah, it is very concerning, and it should concern every citizen out there of the world. If knowing what happened on 9/11, we don't know the full capabilities of this thing. But what happens if somebody turns the knob accidentally up a little bit too high? Whoops, there's a hole to China.
Does Andrew have a speculation as to where this attack might take place?
No, but we listen carefully to what other people have said. And what Michael Chertoff said?
Yes.
And you want to read that from the his document?
Well, I knew Chertoff had gone to California or talked about how if the ports were hit in California, Los Angeles or San Francisco, how rapidly they could recover, which has led me to suspect that those were likely targets. The fact they're having labor problems there, the fact that California is very liberal and democratic, the fact that in San Francisco you have Nancy Pelosi's district, the fact that in Oakland there's a large black community, all that suggests to me that they're very likely to target the Oakland Bay Area here. On the other hand, I think that the Capitol is almost irresistible.
Right. On this page, just below where the asterisks are, is there's a link for my site, but below that's a link for an article in Newsday where it says that Chertoff talks about, he's hearing more and more talk of terror talk. Summertime's a good time for, very appealing for Al-Qaeda. How'd they get that data?
Well, it's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous, because the only examples that can be offered are 7/7 in England, which was clearly executed by the British government on itself, and the so-called liquid bomb plot, which was an absurdity, because none of the terrorists even had passports, they didn't have tickets, they didn't have the equipment. It would have required commandeering lavatories for extensive periods of time with beakers and delicate measurements. Otherwise, you blow yourself up. It would have created a tremendous stench. The whole thing was a fraud and a hoax, and the British even admitted to being prematurely pushed for political reasons into making arrests.
And then we have what, on July 19th, what Paul Craig Roberts said. You're familiar with that?
Yes. Yes, he anticipates, as I have anticipated, as Kevin Barrett has anticipated, that we're going to have another 9/11 take place in the very near future, I suspect this coming month.
And why do you suspect this coming month?
Well, Bush is in such terrible political shape that Congress is going to be dispersed. It's going to be very difficult for Congress to take any kind of action when they're dispersed. It'll all happen, you know, so quickly. I think the time is right. There's so much disillusionment with Bush. He's becoming increasingly criticized. His attorney general is the laughingstock of the nation. The Department of Justice is in political deep water. The whole situation is just exactly the type that Karl Rove likes to utilize to create a new reality to change everything.
And what's interesting is that how there's been a change in response of 9/11 discussions. They've been quieted to the point, like 9/11 blogger has become super censored.
Yeah, that's really quite perverse, Judy. That's an astute observation. Now, this person, Reprehensor, I gather, you know, DZ resigned and Reprehensor took over and they got rid of all the discussion. I mean, that was the whole point of Blogger, was having exchange. I thought it was bad enough when they gave me the boot a couple of months ago, claiming that I was provoking flaming wars, which is ridiculous. All I was doing was representing a different point of view, and on my own blog, no less. And they kicked me off, and they removed my blog, and yet you have some there who are posting saying, why isn't Fetzer showing up to defend himself? I mean, it's as though they're completely obtuse if they haven't even noticed that I've been blocked.
But what I find a concern is that site built itself up to be sort of the local watering hole for what's happening in 9/11, even though it became more and more slanted.
Yes.
If a new event is going to happen, there's going to be a lot of chatter there.
You would think there would be a lot of chatter there, and it's all been suffocated. So that raises serious questions in my mind about the role of Reprehensor.
Or the site. It's just an interesting coincidence, and it seems that an awful lot of forums are shutting down, are censoring, super censoring. If you support Judy Wood, you're immediately banned from the site.
And you got Ambrose Lane fired just before you come on the air, and we got apparently Kevin Barrett's show is being made less and less accessible on the internet. And I expect more and more of this is going to happen.
And it does give you a lot of questions of what happens if another event happens. You're going to forget everything that happened just beforehand. And they're trying to silence 9/11, so afterwards there'll be something else to think about, and it'll get left behind.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today we're concluding an interview with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. We visited her website. She's been talking about a piece written by Andrew Johnson advising of his concerns about a forthcoming false flag operation. Similar warnings have come from multiple sources, including Kevin Barrett, Paul Craig Roberts, and myself. One of our most recent press releases from Scholars was on exactly this topic, and I'm afraid that the real deal is in the works. This is a gang of thugs. They're completely ruthless. If they're willing to murder 3,000 American civilians, invade countries that never threatened us, slaughter in excess of 600,000 Iraqi civilians, and if they have been able to manipulate the situation to put enough power in their hands that they can turn this country into a police state with one-man rule, by God, they're going to do it.
And let's put in a plug for the conference this weekend.
Anyone who's interested, as I suggested in the opening segment, the 9/11 issues are of great concern. They should be central to those who oppose the war because 9/11 was the false flag, the motivation for going to war. It's the theme to which the president constantly returns when he tries to justify our lawless and reckless intervention there. It's also the case that anyone who cares about civil liberties in the United States today has to appreciate that it was 9/11 that was used to justify the Patriot Act, putting the country under national surveillance and violating our civil rights, and that if we're correct about the anticipation of another false flag attack, the more Americans understand what's going on, the better they can cope with it. I encourage everyone to contemplate this conference in Madison, Wisconsin, this coming weekend, the 3rd, 4th, and the 5th, where you can find information about it on 911scholars.org. Just scroll down to the icon. There are many distinguished speakers who will be there, including Judy Wood, Morgan Reynolds, Bob Fatakis, Dave Von Kleist, Barbara Honegger, Lauren Moray, Alfred Weber, Doug Roeke. It's going to be a bonanza for those who are interested in intellectual content in relation to 9/11. It's going to focus on the controversial issues as well as making very clear those which are not controversial. Believe me, if you want a balanced understanding of 9/11, the place to be is at the Madison Radisson here in Madison, Wisconsin this coming weekend.
And we're also going to reveal some new information about a couple of our legal cases we have going on. So
that's right. Another aspect that will be discovered, will be reviewed, is the legal initiatives with the National Institute for Standards and Technology under the Data Quality Act, which was pioneered by Jerry Leapart.
Yeah, we're going to discuss the new developments in all of our cases then, which may be what's making the other side a little bit nervous about, it's a race to see what happens. Going back to Andrew's article, and there's another forecast of something to come, came at the Vancouver. It's pretty interesting to look at the transcript, which Andrew Johnson kindly laid out. Do you want to read it, Jim, beginning with an item of particular interest?
Well, I'm looking for where it is, Judy.
Okay, I also sent it to you in the email, but anyway.
Oh, I see. I think I maybe not have to open it. Why don't you go ahead. Where is it?
It's an item of particular interest to me, which has received no mainstream and very little alternative media coverage, except for InfoWars, is contained in portions of a discussion that took place at the Vancouver conference on June 24th. This bizarre discussion was between Brigham Young University physics professor Stephen E. Jones and Dr. William Deagle. In it, Dr. Deagle stated that 22 U.S. cities have been pre-wired with nukes.
22 U.S. cities.
Yeah. You want to continue?
No, I mean, that's just stunning. I mean, that's like every major city in the United States.
A lot. But they were also
I remember that Stephen Jones was saying send him dust samples as though that were the primary concern, that we just wait and let these attacks take place and then send him a bunch of dust.
Keep reading that point. It says they were also discussing the possibility of another 9/11 type attack. And Professor Jones was heard to say about 30 minutes into this discussion, one other exercise is that we have learned that with evidence, we can learn a great deal about a great deal. So, if there is an event, we won't even name the city. Let's say an American city blamed on Iran. So, and there will be 9/11 truthers nearby, and I hope they realize the importance of collecting a sample. Whether that's dust.
That's right. I'd say that's the first thing you got to do is rush out and collect a dust sample if your city is nuked.
Also, radiation. Yeah. Having a radiation detector handy, if you've got one, whether it's Geiger counter or what, if you send me a sample, I'll be glad to look at it, and I'm sure you would too, Bill.
That's doing a tremendous amount of good for the country, I got to say.
If there is such an event, the reason I'm emphasizing this is because it's a bit of a warning. If there are perpetrators thinking about such another 9/11, they'd better think twice, because 9/11 truthers are out there. We're watching.
Collecting dust samples.
We will get samples. We know what to do. Evidence-based studies. We will do very quickly, and we can put an end to the lies on the next 9/11.
How did Deagle know 22 American cities are wired with nukes?
I don't know, but this is of a major concern. This talk that's going on, and what Jones said is very similar to what Chertoff is saying as well. So the transcript is available, and you can also, there's a link to get an audio of this as well. So these are extraordinary statements to come from two supposedly well-qualified scientists.
Anyone who wants to learn more about 9/11, there's a conference this weekend in Madison, Wisconsin, 3 to 5 August. The Science and the Politics of 9/11, What's Controversial, What's Not. Scholars for 9/11 Truth is sponsoring its first conference. It will be at the Madison Radisson. The purpose is to provide an opportunity to review multiple proofs that the official account of 9/11 cannot possibly be true, to explore some of the issues that have generated controversy in the research community, to afford the opportunity for students of 9/11 to interact personally with leading investigators, and for the participants to reflect on 9/11 in the context of the neocon agenda. A final session will be devoted to assessing the state of current research. The participants include Ace Baker, Kevin Barrett, Bob Fitrakis, Barbara Honegger, Jerry Liepart, Jim Mars, Lauren Murray, Morgan Reynolds, Doug Rocky, Dave Von Kleist, Alfred Weber, and Judy Wood. I encourage everyone, if they possibly can, to turn out, come to the conference. It's going to be intellectually rich. It's going to be very focused, and we have the best expert doing the most important work on 9/11 right now gathered together in one place. Sounds like a tempting target, Judy.
Yes, I just received a message from someone saying the chairman of the House committee was denied access to the revised continuity of government plan.
That's right, and he's now come around to the opinion that maybe these conspiracy theorists are talking about something themselves. I mean, this country is supposed to belong to the American people. It's not supposed to be a private operation. For Dick Cheney and George Bush to be practicing all this secrecy is anti-democratic, un-American, and certainly contrary to the best interests of the people. This is a disgusting situation in which we find ourselves, everybody. You just think about it. There are radio shows being shut down. Hosts are being fired. Programs are being made inaccessible. There are warnings that appear to be indicative of another false flag attack imminent. That means soon, my friends, soon. And I worry it's all going to come to pass here in the month of August. Judy, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show again. It's been a great pleasure. I look forward to seeing you at the conference Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.